Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item. Current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
The American economy, the global economy right now. Turmoil is the word. I welcome Professor John Cochran, who teaches economics at Stanford University, is an esteemed member of the Hoover Institution, writing Grumpy Economist. He's not grumpy. He's quite cheerful. Grumpy Economist on two plans, two visions for a national economy. One entitled Economic Statecraft. The other doesn't have an easy title other than the fact that it's Battling with Bullies is the wonderful title of the piece. Professor, a very good evening to you. Economic statecraft is more straightforward than you describe at one point. An observation that came to me as I was reading through the ideas, the notions, the visions, is that this resembles war by other means. Is that the idea, John? Good evening to you.
Good evening. War, geopolitical competition, all the politics that are short of war, as Clausewitz would have put it, yes. It's a vision put forth by my good colleague here at Hoover, H.R. McMaster, trying to put some intellectual discipline on the use of economic tools, tariffs, export controls, industrial policies, regulations, for national security purposes.
You note at one point that Mr. McMaster and Mr. Grotto, his colleague, were responding to remarks about their economic statecraft and that they were recognizing there were interventionist economic statecraft policies. In other words, they were intervening to the point of taking over the economy. And I think at one point you made the remark about the Soviet Union. I stopped reading at that point and I thought, that's the command economy that failed. That is not the idea here. How is it different?
In scale, I guess. This reflects a wonderful discussion we've been having here at Hoover, because we have economists and we have national security types. And each of us tends to say, oh, wow, you're forgetting all about the important stuff on my end of the spectrum there. So when national security types say we must use all of the tools of our economy, tariffs, industrial policies, subsidies, and so forth, to fight, to either deter or fight, this is a big question, a war with China, the economists tend to say, whoa, wait a minute, that can be extraordinarily damaging. Yes, the Soviet Union was basically a full-time war economy. In an actual war, governments do take over all sorts of industries and do what they can to ruin the industries of their competitors. That doesn't last very long. The Soviet Union kind of imploded because they made it last a long time. So economists are more attuned to the economic damage that protection, subsidies, tariffs, and so forth can do. And so I think that's why we were at least counseling, tread lightly on your desire to take over and direct private labor, capital, and ideas for your geopolitical games is an impolite way of saying it, but for national security purposes. You can easily kill the goose that is laying these golden eggs.
Let me give an example from the news to make sure I understand this idea. Recently, there in the news has been Panama, the Panama Canal, which is a sovereign state since the end of the 20th century. However, the Trump administration challenged whether it was adequate in that it wasn't secure from possible interference or sabotage by bad actors. I think they were thinking of the People's Republic of China, which is certainly recognized as a bad actor. And they pointed to a port at either end of the canal owned by a firm called Hutchinson out of Hong Kong, directed by a Chinese billionaire of great import. Hutchinson owns ports around the world. And that was seen as a weakness. And therefore, at some point, some magic happened, and Larry Fink of BlackRock showed up, bought the whole shebang for $23 billion. Is that economic statecraft? I puzzled so far as to what's going on, other than the fact that it looks like Panama's going along with it because it was either intimidated or angry by the idea that it was going to be taken back.
Yeah, so that's a good example. It may be a good example on the statecraft end. Obviously, the Panama Canal is strategically important to our national security. If there is a war, if there is a blockades or, you know, bad stuff happening, the U.S. Navy needs to get through the Panama Canal. And we need the economic stuff that goes to the Panama Canal to go to the Panama Canal. We would not want the Panamanians saying you can't do it. We would not want an adversary to bomb it and put it out of good. So that's obvious. Now, does a Chinese company owning a port next to the Panama Canal, how dangerous is that? In fact, there's a lot of worry about Chinese ownership of stuff. China goes around the world building ports and airports, and the U.S. goes around the world worrying about that. And so is that a economic statecraft on the part of China that we have to counter somehow, except by us going and building airports in various places? And that's I think, a little more open question than you naturally say. You know, the port is located in Panama. So Latin America is really good at nationalizing things. And if there were any Chinese misbehavior or even Chinese saying we want the loans paid back, nothing stops Panama from saying, well, we're nationalizing this port, so screw you. I mean, we have it. So I think that one's less obvious. I think a better example, a more contentious example, might be this CHIPS Act. Obviously, chips are an issue. We want to have chips in a time of stress. TSMC in Taiwan produces chips. So we passed this CHIPS Act with, I think, like $100 billion. It's rough. I don't have the exact number of subsidies to build chips in the U.S. much more expensively than they're going to be built in Taiwan, with all sorts of childcare and union and the usual stuff in the U.S. So is it a good thing for the U.S. to, you know, put that kind of subsidy into making chips expensively in the U.S. And, well, in time of need, you might want chips, although do you really need the chips that power, you know, there's a lot of chips in the telephone that I'm talking to you on. You know, how quickly do you run out of those? You want the chips to make F-16s, or F-32s, I guess I got my wrong Fs now. But that's a very small number of chips. And so there's a tendency to wrap things in the flag here. And my bottom line on it would be, well, why don't we just put it on the defense budget? And if the generals want 10 aircraft carriers, they can have that. If they want a chip plant, they can have that. There's a big tendency to wrap all sorts of protections in the flag and say, well, we might need this in time of war, and spend hundreds of billions of dollars on really what are consumer products that we can get through a war fine on.
And the economic statecraft of having a private equity firm, BlackRock is large enough to be a state, but it's a private firm, solve a dilemma for you. Is that wise planning? Is that a Soviet style, or is that all by itself?
Well, that's I'm not clear how that's supposed to work, because, of course, it is a private firm. So it's an American-owned firm. And I guess, you know, what does the ownership of the domicile of ownership of a company mean these days?
Right.
When we were talking about Nippon Steel taking over U.S. Steel, I looked up, you know, who are Nokia's stockholders? Well, big American banks are prominent in the top 10 stockholders of Nippon Steel. So I guess it means if you're domiciled in some country, you're subject to that country's laws, and its government can force you to do things in time of stress. But that's about what it means.
We're going to turn to, the professor's already pointed and foreshadowed, we're going to turn to chips when we come back. For an essay, Trading with Bullies, by Louis Garicano, an economist.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.